Maeve by Claire Redaway. This story is inspired by Kipling's Puck of Pook's Hill. It starts by the pools in the Memorial Garden in Alice Park on a summer night as dusk falls. Maeve circled the three pools, trailing a branch in the water. I know a bank where the wild thyme blows, where oxlips and the nodding violet grows. Maeve's voice carried easily to where her mates were lounging under the cedar tree, swigging cans of lager. GCSEs are over, Maeve. You can forget all that now, called Ellie.
I ignore her, said Jake. She's still obsessed with her review. Maeve Meredith was a triumph in Year 11's Midsummer Night's Dream. Now she thinks she's Anne Hathaway.
Maeve closed her eyes, but she could still hear them all laughing at her. Even Ellie, even Ed, who she'd known since she was a baby and who was supposed to be her friend. Quite over-canopied with luscious woodbine. As long as she kept her eyes on the water, she'd not have to see Jake, propped up on one elbow as he lay next to Mia Simmons, smiling down at her, his lips hovering over hers. With sweet musk roses and with eglantine. Why couldn't she look like Mia, with her smooth golden hair and olive skin? Why did she have to have these wild curls and freckles? She smashed at her reflection with the branch, and it fractured into ripples. There sleeps Titania some time of the night. She stared into the water as it calmed, and her reflection stilled again. She hadn't thought she looked that bad. She blinked hard. Her face was the grey-green of oak bark, gnarled and old. Her ears pointed. Panicked, she clutched at her cheeks as with a whoosh something slid out of the pond and clawed up her legs and body. She swatted at it but could get no hold. She was about to scream when a long, cold finger was laid on her lips as another pinched her ear. Shh! It was the face from the pond, and it belonged to a tiny creature, a man, an imp, and it was laughing. Ew! Maeve pushed him off. With a backward somersault, he landed on the stones flanking the pond. But you summoned me, he said sorrowfully. His voice reminded Maeve of a rusty hinge. I did, she said. The creature sighed and stretched. You did. 'Tis midsummer night. The moon is full. You are circling an ancient spring in a place of magic, and you use those words. What didst you expect?
Maeve hadn't expected anything. Certainly not this.
Now come. There is no time to lose. You are needed.
The imp skipped along the tarmac path that led to the park entrance. Maeve gaped after him. Why would she follow that thing? It turned and beckoned her impatiently. Maeve looked towards her friends. Jake was whispering in Mia's ear and she was giggling up at him. Maeve couldn't bear to watch any more. She made up her mind and started after the creature. After all, it couldn't be worse than staying here. Her mother had warned her against strange men, obviously, but not against tiny mythical beings who came up to her mid-thigh.
Maeve, where are you going? Ellie called. Later,
Maeve called back, raising her arm in a wave. She broke into a trot as the creature capered past the weeping ash tree.
Who are you? She panted as she caught up.
Canst you not guess? He said, grinning. I'll put a girdle round the earth in 40 minutes.
Are you Puck?
The very same.
He bowed.
But you don't exist. You're made up. You're in a play.
Ah, but why was I in the play? Because Will Shakespeare knew me. I poured whispers into his ears as he slept. I am Puck. I am Robin Goodfellow. I am Pwaka and I am Pan.
He gave a little caper.
I have lived in the woods and waters of this land since times more ancient than you can imagine.
For someone who was so ancient, Puck turned out to be quite nippy. He'd disappeared by the time Maeve got down to the black wrought iron gates. She looked around, but she couldn't see him anywhere. She felt a jolt of disappointment. Maybe she'd been seeing things. Maybe it was the beer.
She didn't think she was that drunk, but she'd been excited and she'd been distracted from Jake for the first time for weeks. She sighed, turned, and then there Puck was, swinging from the gate that led out onto the road.
"You dawdle, maiden," he said. "Come."
He danced through the gate. "Where are we going?" asked Maeve.
"We will follow in the footsteps of those that have come before you," he said, as though that explained anything at all. "Ah, since 'tis some while since I've felt the breezes of this particular climb."
He turned a cartwheel straight out into the road.
"Careful," called Maeve. "You're lucky there's no traffic about."
She crossed the road at the zebra crossing.
"So where have you been then, if you haven't been round here?"
she asked, but he was too busy cartwheeling and tumbling down the hill towards the London Road to answer. Maeve followed. For once, she wished her mother was here. She'd have loved to have seen Puck. It had been proof that she was right all along. Maeve's mum was a fully paid-up pagan, what her gran called a New Age hippie. So embarrassing. Her mum was at Stonehenge now for the solstice. Funny to think it would have been better for her to pop round the corner and stare into a pool in Alice Park. Maeve giggled. Then she slowed down. Something wasn't right. The traffic lights seemed to have disappeared. So had the shut-up mill which used to be the harvester. All the buildings, in fact. Maeve looked behind her and shivered. Where Alice Park should be was a dense wood. At least the London Road was still there. Even though the surface wasn't tarmac, it looked like stone, and instead of cars... "Ooh," thought Maeve, "that's odd." In front of her in the road was a horse and lopsided covered cart. Three people were gathered around it. There was a man with his back to Maeve, wearing a knee-length brown cloak. A girl with waves of dark hair was standing on his left, wearing a white tunic with a belt around her waist and laced-up sandals. A youth, he's fit, Maeve thought, was holding on to the horse's head. He was wearing a tunic and sandals too. She saw Puck sitting cross-legged in the cart and he waved at her. Maeve was uneasy. This didn't look like fancy dress. She couldn't put her finger on it. Maybe it was that their feet were too dirty, or that there was something of an atmosphere. A baby was squalling and the man was shouting, "Such careless workmanship! That a wheel is cast so close to home," he shouted. Maeve spotted a cartwheel lying in the road, so that was why the cart looked lopsided. "Sorry, master," muttered the youth. He began to unharness the horse. "And you," the man turned to the girl, "how loud must the child cry before you soothe him?" Raising his arm, he struck the girl right across the face. She cried out, stumbled, and nearly fell. "Hey!" cried Maeve.
"Hush," said Puck. "Wait."
The girl's lip was bleeding. She glared at the man. He didn't strike her again, but instead walked towards the horse and, with the youth's help, climbed onto its back.
"What a pig," thought Maeve. "How dare he?"
"Bring the valuables. The rest we will collect later," said the man.
The youth pulled some saddlebags out of the cart. He leant towards the girl and gently wiped the blood from her face. She pushed him away, instead lifting the baby out of the cart and shoving it into a cloth sling, none too gently.
"Quickly,"
called the man. Maeve could see that the youth wanted to stay with the girl, but he took hold of the horse's head and started to lead it. The man called back,
"Have you the baby?"
"Yes, master," she said. As the horse walked off and the girl fell in line behind it, Puck scampered up to the horse's tail and gave it a strong tug. The horse shied. As he calmed the circling animal, the rider turned to face on to Maeve. He was a man of some age. He had a thin face with strong bones and a hooked, beaky nose. But what startled Maeve were his eyes. They were milky white. The man was blind. Maeve stared as the strange trio moved off along what should have been the London Road towards Bath, or what had been Bath. Now all she could see were trees coming down to a road made of flat paving slabs. There were no cars and no buildings, but it looked like it was the same route. Maeve remembered her mother saying the London Road was the old road into Bath. Then there, beside her again, was Puck.
"Wherefore must you stop so often, maiden?" he said. "Did you see what he did to her?" said Maeve. "I definitely think we should call the police."
Puck doubled up with laughter.
"What? What's so funny?"
Puck flung his arm out.
"Then where resteth those guardians of the peace?"
"The police station's in Manvers Street, if that's what you mean," said Maeve.
"'Tis the year of your lord, 154, said Puck softly. "She has no protector save you. Come, follow."
As he set off with his strange skipping gait, he turned back to her and his eyes narrowed.
"Anger me not, maiden, test not my patience. Puck can disappear with the flick of a serpent's tongue. Make haste."
As Maeve scuttled along what had been the London Road, she remembered her teacher, Mrs. Vincent, talking about Puck. He was the trickster, the mischief maker. "I must be careful," Maeve thought. "If he was anything like his legend, he'd be a slippery customer. What would happen to her if she lost him? What did he want from her? And why AD 154? She struggled to remember something, anything, about AD 154. Was that the Anglo-Saxons? Romans? Celts? Where should she start? "Can they see me?" she asked when she caught up with Puck. Puck's mood had lightened again.
"Let's see," he said, giggling.
They were just behind the group.
"And how can I understand them? Shouldn't they be speaking Latin or Angle or something?"
Puck vanished, and then she felt hot breath in her ear. He must have clambered on her back.
"'Tis my cunning means you can understand their Latin tongue," he whispered.
Maeve cringed. "Get off! Get off!" She shook herself. He tickled like having spider in her hair. "Yuck!" He hopped down. Laughing back at her, he went up to the girl who was at the back of the group, trudging along with her head down, muttering to herself. Puck crouched and held out his arm. Maeve stared. He looked exactly like the root of an oak tree. The girl tripped over him, and as she did so, she looked round and caught sight of Maeve. The girl gaped. Then she prostrated herself flat on the road, her arms out. "Hail, fair goddess," was what Maeve thought she said. The baby was wailing again, furious at being flung down.
"Postumia, what ails you? Silence the child."
The rider was obviously still angry.
"Yes, master,"
Postumia called over her shoulder.
"Are you all right?" said Maeve. "Look, I'll help you."
"Oh, no, the honour is too great, O goddess,"
said the girl. She scrambled to her feet, jiggling the baby to quiet it.
"Hey, I'm not a goddess. My name's Maeve."
"Maeve, you bear the name Queen. You are the answer to my prayers."
The girl was grinning madly now, hopping from foot to foot with excitement.
No, I'm really not. I was just walking round this pond,
the sacred spring, that my people and my priests worship. Oh, what honour and glory are mine that you appear so radiant before me, yet so oddly clad.
Maeve had been pleased with her outfit. Short shorts, flip-flops, strappy top. But maybe to this Roman or Celt or whatever person.
"I will forever hold your yellow daisies sacred," said the girl, looking at Maeve's head.
Maeve remembered she was wearing a band of flowers from Primark in her hair.
"Postumia!"
the man called.
"I must follow, unless you smite him with a thunderbolt, or cause his horse to rear and trample him, or strike him with some dread fever that should cause his bowels to turn to blood and vomit forth through his nose."
No, I can't do that," said Maeve.
"Ah, well," said the girl.
They set off side by side to follow the horse.
"Of course, my name is not Postumia. 'Tis Ula, after the name of my grandmother, may she be blessed in the afterlife. But this name must never be used."
"Why?" asked Maeve.
"They renamed me when I was sold,"
the girl said simply.
"You're a slave," said Maeve. It was her turn to gape. "A real-life slave."
"But of course, you must know this. You must know all things."
"Well,
now, I beg you tell me our plan, fair goddess. How I have prayed to you for this moment.
Tell me, how should we escape? Should I take the baby?
The girl unstrapped the baby and, holding it upside down by its legs, started to swing it.
And thrust it beneath the horse's feet as a sacrifice?
The girl was actually going to do it. No, stop! Maeve grabbed the baby from Postumia and hugged it. She looked around wildly. She wanted to get away. She wanted to get back to Ellie and the others. She reckoned she was round about where Morrison's should be, but there was no Morrison's, just bloody trees and water glinting through them. Or up the hill? The undergrowth was thick here. Oh, no, the mad girl was speaking again.
You wish to take the baby as one of your own? She asked. 'Tis fitting.
It wasn't fitting at all. The poor little thing was gurgling at her. Maeve liked babies. She'd done a lot of her revising, babysitting next door's twins.
Oh, no.
Postumia seemed distressed. Oh, no, no, no. She was starting to make a weird, keening noise.
What? What's the matter now?
Asked Maeve. The girl fell to the ground, her fists banging on the paving.
Postumia!
Hissed the youth. He left the horse and, dashing back, pulled the girl to her feet.
Stop it! Take care!
The goddess came for the baby Serenus, not for me.
Postumia! Cassius! Where are you?
The rider asked, moving his sightless head from side to side.
What goddess? What nonsense do you speak?
Said the youth, looking straight through Maeve.
Did you come for the baby? Tell me! The girl shrieked at Maeve.
No, I didn't, said Maeve. She saw the rider turn. He raised his arm and lashed out, cutting at the air with a whip. It missed Postumia's face by a hair's breadth. He raised his arm again. He was closer. Maeve had to do something. Still clutching the baby, she ran towards the rider, and as his arm descended, she grasped it.
Stop him!
She shouted at Puck, but he put his fingers in his pointed ears and shrugged. Dropping the rider's hand, Maeve whacked the horse on its haunches and screeched. It worked. The horse bolted. Cassius ran after it. This gave Maeve time to say,
Look, I haven't come for the baby. I haven't come for anyone. I was in the park and this boy I used to go out with was all over his new girlfriend and...
She stopped. Postumia was looking blankly at her.
Oh, come on, or he'll really hurt you. Who is he anyway?
Who?
Postumia allowed herself to be pulled along.
The blind man.
He is my master, Gaius Valerius Justus. We have travelled for many days and nights to Aquasulis, from Gaul. He is angry today as he sat up with his friend until sunup and his head aches.
Being hungover and blind was no excuse to whack people in the face with whips, thought Maeve.
He hurt you, said Maeve.
The girl shrugged and touched her lip.
Better cruel than loving.
Maeve stared and shuddered.
Why did he come here?
She asked.
Why? For the sacred springs, of course. The master believes the waters will heal his eyes and the baby.
Why? What's wrong with your baby?
Postumia snorted. Can you not see? Maeve looked at the baby. For the first time, she noticed that his legs were twisted, his feet turned inwards.
He will never walk. He will never be straight or ride with ease, said Postumia.
You must be so worried about him, said Maeve.
The girl looked genuinely puzzled.
Why?
She asked.
Well, it'll be so much harder to raise your son than a child whose legs are normal.
Perhaps that's why she'd been so keen to sacrifice him, Maeve thought.
My son? You think that this is my son? You believe my master would travel halfway across the known world to cure the son of a slave?
What strange notions you hold. My son lies dead, cast into a pit behind the pig midden.
He died?
He was never allowed to live.
Maeve didn't know what to say.
Postumia looked the same age as she was herself, and yet she'd experienced birth, death, slavery. Maeve hugged the baby. No wonder the girl treated him so harshly.
Where's the baby's mother?
Nah, died in childbirth. The family is cursed. The master wanted to come whilst he had some little sight remaining.
Oh, that poor child, said Maeve. Postumia looked at her.
You cry for him? What of me? I was born a free woman. I was to be a priestess.
So what happened? The girl was silent for a long time. Maeve walked beside her until...
There was a rebellion.
Postumia's voice was low.
They were fools. Did they think they could beat the might of the Roman Empire? What wrath they brought upon their heads! The slaughter!
As she spoke, the horse bearing her master pranced near. Its eyes were wild and its coat was gleaming with sweat. Cassius was struggling to keep it under control.
To her! To her!
The blind man called. Cassius pulled the horse towards Postumia, and before Maeve could tell what was happening, the blind man had grabbed Postumia's long black hair. He wound it tightly around his fist, pulling Postumia towards him until her face was pressed against his leg. With his other hand, he grasped her chin.
Hear me, slave.
His voice was low.
Through your actions, my life hung by a thread. You will be punished. You will feel only fear and regret for the few days that remain of your worthless life.
He let go of Postumia and Maeve could see the imprints of his fingers on her face.
Move on!
Postumia was white and shaking, and so was Cassius. He held out a hand towards Postumia. She leant towards him and spat in his face. Then Postumia fell to her knees and clutched at Maeve's legs. She raised her face imploringly.
Please, Goddess Maeve, for the love of all that is holy, save my life. Help me. We are close to my people. 'Tis only over the great river and thence to the hills of my land. He will kill me.
Maeve looked at the girl's white face staring up at her, the eyes brimming, believing that Maeve and Maeve alone could help.
Okay, I'll do what I can,
Maeve said, nearly crying herself. The girl leapt to her feet, smiling. And then there was Puck, sitting on the rump of the calmed horse. He leaned over and whispered to Maeve.
Her blood on your hands.
He flicked his tongue at her, and it was the forked tongue of a snake.
See that you succeed.
But I've no idea what I can do, thought Maeve wildly. She looked around. The woods were still thick, although every now and again they'd been cleared and a stone monument that looked like a gravestone had been built. In the far distance, Maeve could see buildings and people. Was that where Snow Hill was or should be? No, it was beyond Snow Hill, further in towards the city.
What about, what's his name, Cassius? Can he help?
Asked Maeve.
Cassius, said the girl.
He thinks he is fortunate. Warm bed, hot food, not too many beatings. He is slave bred. He's a fool.
Maeve thought about the way that Cassius looked at Postumia and heard the contempt in her voice. Poor Cassius. Jake had never looked at her like that.
So, shall you cast a spell on the master that will turn him into a pig? Asked the girl. Or an eel?
Said Maeve. She's perked up, she thought.
Will you transform me into a beautiful swan that I may fly to my homeland on the breath of a zephyr? Perhaps you could whip the master's poor nag into a horse winged like Pegasus, that we could consume the town in fire and flee.
Actually, I really can't do any of that.
What powers of enchantment and transformation do you possess?
Postumia asked.
Well, none, confessed Maeve.
A look of irritation passed over the girl's face. Maeve could see that she thought it was just her luck to get such a substandard goddess. Maeve felt useless. She couldn't save this girl. How could she, who couldn't even keep a boyfriend for more than 3 weeks, expect to do something, anything, to actually rescue someone? But if she didn't, the girl would die, and Puck would vanish and abandon Maeve in this strange new world. She had to think. Think hard. Maeve was so preoccupied that she hadn't noticed the trees had been thinning out. There was a fork in the road ahead. Straight on led up the hill to what looked like a market. To the left, the road went down to the river. Maeve knew quite a lot about the River Avon. She'd studied it in geography. It did look different from usual, wider somehow. But it was still the same river, and it gave Maeve her idea. Postumia had talked of mountains and a great river. Perhaps she meant, "Postumia, are you from Wales?" Maeve asked. Postumia nodded dully. "So you can get to Wales by going down the river. I bet there aren't any locks or weirs or anything. It all looks wild. You can just float down it until you get to the Severn. It's not far, and Wales is on the other side," said Maeve, swept up by her own enthusiasm. "All we need is a boat." Postumia didn't look depressed any more. She looked downright terrified. Maeve, however, was galvanised. She could see there was some kind of round boat tied up on the river bank, big enough for two people. Trouble was, there was already a large man in it, swigging at a leather bottle and singing to himself. "There," said Maeve.
"'Tis a sign," muttered Postumia. She threw herself down again. "I beg forgiveness for doubting you, O goddess."
"Ah, it's all right," said Maeve.
"What of the boatman?" Postumia asked.
Maeve had wondered the same herself. She looked around for Puck, saw him almost under her feet, and grabbed his arm. "Look," she said, "this is all your fault, not mine. I didn't ask to come here. You brought me, and I've made everything worse, so you need to help me sort it out."
Puck pouted.
"Oh, please," she begged. Flicking his tongue at her, he shrugged, and then scampered to the coracle. Hopping in, he took hold of the man's bottle, then hopped out again onto the bank. The man, his arms outstretched, followed his bottle, and Puck scampered into the trees.
"You said you could make no transformations, yet you make the bottle fly," said Postumia, awed.
Maeve shrugged modestly. "Now, we'd better get down there." Unfortunately, Cassius had had the same idea. He turned left to go down to the river.
"Why this way, Cassius?" shouted Postumia. "Surely we are to go to the inn ahead. There is no need to ford the river."
"Horse is thirsty," said Cassius.
He walked the horse down to the river's edge. The river was wider, shallower, and slower than the river Maeve knew. She saw that there was a way across, a causeway built under the water.
"'Tis done,"
a hot whisper in Maeve's ear. Puck was on her shoulder. She glanced into the woods to see the unfortunate boatman, trussed and gagged, stranded halfway up an ash tree. He was kicking his tied legs feebly.
"Brill," said Maeve. "Now, Cassius?"
Puck rolled his eyes. The blind man had dismounted, and Cassius was busy with the horse. Puck sneaked up behind him, leapt onto his shoulders, and covered both eyes with his hands.
"Hey," cried Cassius, "I can't see."
"Now,"
said Maeve, and she shoved Postumia towards the boat. Postumia, however, had her own plan. Before Maeve could stop her, she grabbed the baby and threw it into the boat before pushing the vessel into the water, leaping on board. Maeve tried to follow her, but she found her legs would not move. Puck leapt into the boat.
"Stop!"
shouted Cassius, rubbing at his eyes. He waded out into the water.
"What is happening?"
cried the blind man, turning his head to the sounds in the water.
"Postumia? Cassius!"
Postumia took the baby and dangled it over the edge of the coracle.
"Do not follow me. Let me flee. I will sacrifice the child."
The blind man gave a great shout and started out into the river. But Cassius was ahead of him, waist high now. He was nearly at the boat, but it was caught by the current and swept out of his grasp. Maeve could not move her legs. There seemed to be some solid obstacle between her and the water. The water was retreating below her and a shadowy structure appearing. She could still make out what was happening through the haze. Cassius was up to his chest in water. The boat was still for a moment, caught in an eddy. He was nearly beside it.
"Pass him the baby! Pass him the baby!"
Maeve shouted. Postumia looked around, puzzled by where Maeve's voice was coming from. Maeve was struggling to get to them, but she felt hands on her body, pulling her back. As Cassius tried to catch the boat, Postumia tossed the baby into the river. The boat was caught in a current and swirled away downstream. Shouting, Cassius dived forward, and as he did so, the scene faded. The structure in front of Maeve hardened into the parapet of Cleveland Bridge. She heard voices.
"Come down! Please, Maeve, don't do it!"
The scene below her had almost vanished when Maeve saw Cassius burst out of the water and lift the baby up. Maeve heard the faintest of cries and saw, as though through a layer of veils, the blind man wade out to hug his baby son. Lastly, Maeve saw Puck sitting on the edge of the coracle, beckoning and calling to us,
"Come with us, Maeve! Come!"
She felt the strongest urge to dive off the bridge and get to him. Then they were gone. The river was deep and dark and far below her. She was sitting on the parapet of Cleveland Bridge with both legs dangling over the edge as though she was about to jump. Someone was holding the waistband of her shorts. Maeve froze.
"Help," she said.
"I've got you." Arms went round her waist. "I'll catch you." She fell back. There was a groan and a tangle of arms and legs, and then she was standing on the safe side of the bridge, and there was Ellie and Ed.
"What are you doing here?" Maeve asked.
"What are you doing?" said Ellie. "He's totally not worth it. He's an asshole."
"Who?"
"Jake, of course," said Ellie.
Maeve had completely forgotten about Jake. After this evening, he really wasn't important anymore.
"Why did you come?" Maeve said.
"We were worried about you," said Ed.
"We were looking everywhere, and then there you were, sitting on the bridge, babbling about babies. What are you on?" said Ellie.
"Thank you, guys. Thanks so much," said Maeve.
Ed blushed.
"I think I'd like to go home now."
"Okay," said Ellie, "as long as you tell us what you thought you were up to."
"I don't think you'd believe me," said Maeve, and she allowed Ed to put his arm around her to keep her warm as they turned back along the London Road to home.
Deep in the swamp below the sacred spring in the centre of Bath lies a Roman curse tablet. The words are scratched on lead and read, "I curse the slave Postumia. I curse her life, her mind, and her memory. May she never love another." It is signed Cassius Flavius Justus, freedman. Archaeologists have not found it yet.